I know it's Christmas night, but we're going to keep on studying the relationship that the bride and bridegroom had in the Song of Solomon, that we may emulate the relationship that they had and the way they treated each other. Tonight, I'm going to speak what I think is the most important of all the lessons I've taught. I'm going to speak tonight on a guarantee to building a good marriage. You do what I teach tonight, I guarantee you, you'll build a good marriage. The title of my lessons tonight is What This Couple Did When They Were Apart. What they did when they were apart. What you do when you're together is not as important as what you do when you're not together. For what you do when you're not together will determine what you do when you're together. So open your Bibles, please, the Song of Solomon, chapter number 2, verse number 6. One verse, his left hand is under my head, and his right hand doth embrace me. Sound like a pretty good deal there, doesn't it? His left hand is under my head, and with his right hand shall demonstrate. No, I won't do that. But, yeah, but of course, come on up here. But anyway, I would do it, but my right arm isn't long enough to get around him. But anyway, his left hand is under my head. Now they're together. You see, in the Song of Solomon, they're coming and going. They're together, then they're separated, then they're together again, then they're separated again. And now in verse number 6 of chapter 2, they're together. His left hand is under my head, and his right hand doth embrace me. Now turn, please, to chapter number 8 and verse number 3. They're apart now. A while ago they were together, and his left hand was under her head, and the right hand embraced her. Now in verse number 3 of chapter 8, his left hand should be under my head, and his right hand should embrace me. Now, what does that mean? That means while they're together, they're hugging, and while they weren't together, she's thinking about hugging. It means while they were together, he embraced her, and while they were apart, she thought of his embracing her, and I'll go into that for a while. But I want to say this tonight very seriously. What you do when you're apart is more important than anything in your marriage. So I want you to follow me. Our Father, bless the study tonight, please. May it benefit our marriage, either here in this church and those who share with us tonight. In Jesus' name, amen. Our Father, in these few moments we have, may we learn something to cement our marriages. I pray tonight that people, you know who needs it. I pray that people that need it most will listen most carefully. And I pray that all of us will benefit from the study. Amen. Let me repeat what I said a while ago, and I promise you in 36 minutes from right now you'll be on your way home. Maybe sooner. I guarantee you, if you will abide by what I'm going to teach tonight, it will either guarantee you to have a good marriage, or it will guarantee you to continue a good marriage. The title is What This Couple Did When They Were Apart. Now, throughout the book of Song of Solomon, the couple is together, and then they're apart, and then together, and then apart. Please do not take notes now. We don't do that here. We listen carefully. You'll get a lot more out of it if you don't take notes. So I want you to listen to it very carefully tonight. Now, I'm going to give you 6 things that they did while they were apart. Number 1 is what we did a while ago. In chapter 2 and verse 6, it says, his left hand is under my head, and his right hand doth embrace me. Now in chapter 8 and verse 3, they're separated, not together. I don't mean they were having trouble. I mean they just weren't, he was gone on a business trip of some kind. And she said, his left hand should be under my head, and with his right arm or hand, he should embrace me. Now what is that saying? I'm saying, when you're apart, you should think about affection with each other. I've traveled with a lot of preachers. I've traveled on trips overseas with preachers. It's very, very interesting as I've traveled. Some talk about their wives often, and some never mention their wives. Now, I'm not saying that means that some think of their wives and some don't. The fact that somebody doesn't mention his wife while overseas, while traveling, doesn't mean he doesn't think about her. But it's a pretty good measurement if a person is talking about her. It was obvious. For example, if a fellow says nothing about his wife, or a wife says nothing about her husband on the part, we don't know she's thinking about him. But if they're talking about him, we do know. One of these is Bill Burr. Bill Burr, on two occasions, we've been to the Philippine Islands, and Bill Burr's been with us, and we've traveled all the way from here. We flew from here to Tokyo, and Tokyo to Manila, and then Manila to Iloilo, and then back to Manila, and back to Tokyo, and back to Chicago. And every time Bill see a couple kissing each other, he'd say, "Boy, I wish I was home. I like that. I like that. Boy, I wish I was home." Now, I'm simply saying that while you're apart, you ought to think about the joy of being together and showing each other affection. Now, one way to do that is put reminders. I have reminders while you're apart. For example, and you've heard me say this before, I carry a little picture about that big of Mrs. Hiles in my briefcase. When I unpack, I don't have a briefcase, I have a suitcase. When I unpack, I put that picture of Mrs. Hiles right beside the bed, on the table, beside the bed, and I see it often, and it reminds me to think of her. And I go to bed at night, and I take the pillow and hug it and kiss it, and not much thrill, hugging and kissing the pillow, but I look at her picture while I do it. And it's a reminder to me. I have a big conference Bible, and I have her picture in that Bible, and it would cover about, I'd say, two-thirds of that page right there. It's a 5 or 7 picture. And folks, I'll be on the platform. Folks think I'm reading the Bible, and I'm looking at Ms. Hiles' picture there. Dr. Bruce Goddard came to pastor school, and I told the men in pastor school, I said, "I keep a picture of Ms. Hiles in the Bible. I keep a picture of Ms. Hiles pasted inside my Cruden's Concordance. That's the book I use second most. I keep a picture of Ms. Hiles inside my Vine's Expository Dictionary, Testament Word. I keep a picture of Ms. Hiles inside my Webster Dictionary, inside my Bible Dictionary, and I keep them there." Well, I told the people, I said, "A picture of Ms. Hiles inside my Bible, right there, about my conference Bible." And so I was preaching out in Southern California for Dr. Bruce Goddard. And Dr. Goddard got up and said, "Brother Hiles did me a great favor." He said, "I was in pastor school. He told me, he kept a picture of Ms. Hiles inside his Bible. And I came home and decided to do the same thing." He opened his Bible and there's a picture of Ms. Hiles inside his Bible right there. But I'm saying, folks don't get, in fact, I've heard of 4 or 5 other preachers that pictures Ms. Hiles inside the Bible. This is not the case with the Goddard, but I've seen the wives of the fellows. I don't know why they had Ms. Hiles' picture inside the Bible. But the first thing this couple did when they were apart, and that they thought affectionately of each other. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. Hey, did you know it's just as wrong not to kiss after you're married as it is to kiss before you're married? And did you know it's just as wrong not to hug after you marry as it is to hug before you marry? Nothing wrong with that at all. And I think that while you're waiting your wife, you ought to think, "Boy, I'd like to have a good old hug right now." And a good old slobbery kiss sure sounds good right now. And with this couple, when they were apart, and we're trying to emulate this couple. We're trying to find out what made them so close. We're trying to emulate them. So the first thing, they thought affectionately of each other when apart. Number two, they missed each other. I want you to look, please, at chapter 3 and verse 1. Chapter 3 and verse 1. This is the bride talking here now, or the wife. "By night on my bed I sought him whom my soul loveth. I sought him, but I found him not." Now what is she saying there? Look at me now. She's saying, "I thought about him. I dreamed about him. I dreamed at night that I was seeking him and I was looking for him." And so I have down here, miss each other. seek to be together. Call each other on the telephone while you're apart. Let each other know that you miss each other. Let each other know that you want to be with each other. Look at chapter 6 and verse 13. You'll find something else about that. Chapter 6 and verse number 13. I like this. Return, return, O Shulamite. Return, return that we may look upon thee. So what she was saying was, come on back, come on back, come on back. Look, your husband ought to feel that while you're apart that you're just about to die. And your wife ought to feel the same way. There ought to be a and that means thinking about each other. And that means missing each other and seeking to be together. Every once in a while I hear some lady, she'll say, oh, my husband's been off of work. He's been laid off and he's at home all the time and he's in my way. He's under my feet all the time. I want to get an ice pick and stick it in your eyeball. I really do. Every husband ought to feel like his wife wants to be with him and misses him when they're apart. Every wife ought to feel like her husband misses her when they're apart and wants to be with her also. I'm saying, you're not gonna enjoy each other as much when you're together unless you anticipate getting together while you're apart. So, the first thing I said tonight is, think affectionately when apart. And number two, miss each other. Seek to be together. Call on the telephone. Let each other know that you miss each other. And let each other know that you want to be with each other. Number three. Look at chapter 3 and verse 3, please. Chapter 3 and verse 3. The watchmen that go about the city found me, to whom I said, saw ye whom my soul loveth? Now see, she's telling the watchman there that she loves her husband. She's saying, my soul loves him. And she's telling them that she loves us. Look at chapter 2 and verse 5. Chapter 2 and verse 5. Stay me with flagons, comfort me with apples, for I am sick of love. Now look at me. This gal, when she was away from her husband, she told, look at me now, no talking, she told, and really I wish you'd let me help you rather than entertain you. I don't mind laughing a bit, but I think you ought to wait till all of us laugh. I'm not kidding when I'm talking about this. I'm saying there are too many couples that never hug, they never kiss, they never enjoy each other affectionately. There are couples that don't like to be together. There are couples that where the lady would rather be out with some girls, other ladies, than with her husband. Or the guy would rather be out with some guys than with his wife. I'm saying, while you're apart, think affectionately of each other. And while you're apart, miss each other. And then, here, while you're apart, tell others you love each other. Tell others. Let folks know you love each other. Folks ought to think that you're desperately in love with your wife or your husband. Let them know. Oh, you stay with the house. That make them sick, then make them sick. Oh, they'd get disgusted, then disgust them. So what they did, listen, she told the people of the city that she loved him. She told the watchman, that's the policeman in the city, that she loved him. She told all the daughters of Jerusalem, all these unmarried gals, a bunch of them, she told them, there was a public declaration from this young lady that I love my guy, and I want you to know I love my guy. I wish you'd been known, Dr. Bill Rice. Most charming man I ever, most charming person I ever met. The most dynamic preacher. Dr. Bill Rice was probably a little better than average preacher and an average Bible teacher, but he was the most delightful person I've ever met in my life. He called his wife the princess. The princess scared me to death. I first time I ever heard him preach, I didn't know who the princess was. He said, I was over there in Saudi Arabia. He said, and the princess and I were sharing room over there. Oh, my soul, my soul, my soul. I thought, what in the world have I gotten into? I want to stop the service. I didn't know his wife was called the princess. And he bragged on her good night and he said about how pretty she was. And the whole revival, he preached revival on me, the whole meeting, he talked about the princess. And man, I could picture a combination of Mother Teresa, Marilyn Monroe, and Eva Gabor, and Can't think of anybody else. But, and to be quite frank, when I saw her the first time, but anyway, she's a lovely lady, but I mean, you'd be amazed. He talked about it. By the way, there's safety in that. There's safety there. Now, she was a princess, and he talked about her, and talked about the fact that he loved her. That's the question. How long has it been since you told anybody else that you love your husband? How long has it been since you told anybody else that you love your wife? How long has it been? I've been traveling for, good night, how many years? I've been preaching 51 years. I've been traveling either by car or by plane for 45 of those years, and I've been going every week probably now for nearly 40 years, except when I first came here. I canceled a bunch of meetings till I got adjusted here. But only twice in all those years have evil women come to me and tried to get me to spend the night with them. Only twice. And I've stayed in hotels and motels and so forth, and as good looking as I am, it's a shock. But one time, one was in Memphis, Tennessee, and I won't go into that. The other was in Dallas, Texas, at the Westin Hotel in Dallas, Texas. I parked my car out in the parking lot. I was walking to this very nice hotel, and this very attractive young lady was driving, and she stopped, and she said, "Would you like to have some company for the evening?" And I said, and I wrote down there what I said. I said, "If your name is Beverly, if you're 5'6", weigh 135, you live at 8232 Greenwood in Munster, Indiana, and you're the prettiest blonde in the world." This gal was a Spanish lady. "Prettiest blonde in the world. And with the marriage license, my name on it, unless that's who you are, I'm not interested." Now, she got the idea that I had somebody back home I cared for and I loved. Now, that's the question. The folks know, be away from her. You talk about it. Talk about each other. He's all over the house. Then more people. Then more people. I don't care if folks entertained or not. Let them get bored. They may chase them off. You can get some work done. I'm saying that while they're apart, while this couple was apart, number one, they thought affectionately of each other. She thought about his hugging her. She thought about his left hand being around her neck and his right hand embracing her. And she said, "Boy, that's what should be going on right now." Now in chapter 2, it went on, but chapter 8, he was gone, and she was thinking about his hugging her. Now, and the second thing was, they missed each other while they were gone, and they sought to be together. And the third thing was, they told others that they loved each other. Number 4, look at chapter 5, please. Chapter 5 and verse number 9. The daughters of Jerusalem speaking here. "What is thy beloved more than another beloved, O thou fairest among women? What is thy beloved more than another beloved, that thou dost so charge us? My beloved," here she's talking, the bride's talking now, "my beloved is white and ruddy, the chiefest among 10,000. And she goes on, at verse 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, all those verses, she's bragging on her lover. All right? Number 4, while you're apart, brag on him or brag on her. I've used this illustration before, but you were married. You came here, weren't you? Miss Colston was married, but Brother Johnny was in Korea. And that's one reason why we lost that war over there. But Brother Johnny was in Korea. Did we lose the Korean War? Oh, you were asleep. You didn't know whether we lost it or won it. But Miss Colston came here to teach in an elementary school, and Brother Johnny was in Korea. And I'll tell you what, that's all she talked about. Now, wait a minute. How? How old were you then? 21, that's 100 years ago? Several years ago. You said you've been working here 34 years? She's 21 years of age. Now, wait a minute. She was an attractive, young, 21-year-old lady. She was living in a metropolitan area. One of the safest things that woman could do was brag all the time on her husband. And she did. She did. I mean, she lied, but she bragged on him. And, I mean, you'd thought this guy was a combination of the Apostle Paul and Arnold Schwarzenegger. But anyway, but she did. Now, you listen to me. You brag on your husband while he's away. You brag on your wife while he's away. I went to my dentist the other day, and Ms. Hiles had been there having some dental work done. And I had some teeth were bothering, so I went to, what was it, Monday morning. And I went to the dentist. He had only met Ms. Hiles. He had met Ms. Hiles just recently, because she had not had any work there. And I had been there many times, and I walked in, and he said, "She's what you said she was. She's what you said she was." He said, "She is the perfect picture," I think something like this, of a Southern, aristocratic Southern belle, something like that. But now, wonder why. She's what you said she was. Get that now? She's what you said she was. Fellas, you listen to me carefully. While you're at work, if you work out in the secular field, you better be, one of the safest things you'll ever do is talk about your wife and how great she is. And young ladies, if you work in the secular field, the wisest thing you'll ever do is discuss everybody that works there. We're talking about your guy and what a great guy he is. Now you listen to me. You listen to me. Say, this is so mundane. It's in the Bible. God thought it was important enough to put it in the Bible. I mean, God told about this guy hugging his wife. He told about this guy wishing he was there to hug her again. That's in the book. It's as inspired in the book as John 3:16 is inspired in the book, or Genesis 1 is inspired in the book. Now, I'm saying that while apart, they bragged on each other. All right, number one, they're apart. Now, let me say it again. If while you're apart, good night, I bet you Bill Burr, he had already had heart trouble on that last trip over. I bet you got back to his wife, he broke the 100-yard dash record getting to her. That's all he talked about. By the way, we had just been gone about 10, 12 hours. We're on a flight going over the ocean, going to Tokyo. And Bill got so lonesome, his wife, he said, I wish I were a poet. I want to write my wife a poem and tell her how I feel. But he said, I'm not a poet. And 15 minutes later, he said, man, I wish I were a poet. Man, I'd like to write my wife a poem. A few minutes later, he's sitting behind me. He said, "Up, Kyle, you're a poet. Would you write my wife a poem?" I said, "Bill, folks will talk." He said, "Do me a favor. Act like you're me and write what you think I'd say." He said, you heard me brag on her. You know I missed her. And so I sat down up there and I wrote Mrs. Burr a poem. I really did. And my marriage is in jeopardy right now, but I wrote Mrs. Burr. It was an imaginary poem. Not an imaginary poem. It was a real poem. But I was imagining what Bill Burr would say to her and thanking her for traveling and for living in one-room hotels rooms and so forth. But the guy, he'd kill me if I hadn't written the poem for him to give to her. It's all I talked about. Absolutely. We were in Elo. And he disgusted me talking about his wife. He just disgusted me. But that's the way it ought to be. I said, while this couple was apart, was important. And while you're... Listen... If while you're at work, fellas, you think about her, think about embracing her, think about kissing her, think about being with her. And ladies, if you'll do the same thing, and if you'll miss each other, and think about how one of you, and tell folks that you love each other, and brag on each other, I'll mind you one thing, when finally the time comes you get back together, you're going to have a whopping good time. when you get home. But you see what happens. She's got her mind on a bunch of stuff, not on him. He's got his mind on work and a bunch of stuff, and not on her. And they get back together. She's not been thinking about him. He's not been thinking about her. And there's a problem, and I'll get into that in just a few minutes. I said, number one, this couple thought affectionately of each other when apart. I said, number two, they missed each other, sought to be together, let each other know how much they missed each other, and wanted to be with each other. I said, number three, they told others about their love for each other. I said, number four, they bragged on each other while apart. Number five, they were excited when they got back together. Look at chapter 5 and verse 4. Chapter 5 and verse 4. My beloved put his hand by the hole of the door, my bowels, that's the heart, my affection, my heart, I was stirred. Please don't be laughing now. That's a wicked time to laugh. I mean that. I'd be ashamed if I were laughing about this verse right here. I really would. I'd be ashamed. I don't mad at anybody, but I'm trying to teach you, and you'll take a word that it means something else to us, and it's plain sacrilegious as far as I'm concerned. Now I want you, she said, when I heard the door, okay, let's put it this way. If you said it, if you got a garage attached to the house, when I heard the garage door go up, my inner self was stirred. I was thrilled. That's it. That's the best word. I was thrilled. He was coming home. And it says, what happened? He put his hand to the hole of the door, to open the door. And he said, I was moved. My inner being was moved for him. Look forward to it. By the way, meet him at the door. And meet her at the door. Listen. If Ms. Hiles is out somewhere, like when she went out to, when she sang the night at the, what do you call it? Christmas lights thing. I didn't go. I didn't go because it's her night, and if I went there, I'd be signing Bibles and everything, and they'd want me to sing instead of her. And I don't go. I stay at home. But I tell you what, I arrange my schedule. When she gets home, I'm there. And when that door opens, I'm at the door. And if she goes somewhere sometime at night and I'm by myself, when I hear the garage door open, I go move the chair away from the door that I've got blocking the door there. And that's a scary place alone, I tell you for sure. And I come in sometimes at 3 o'clock in the morning. The door may be unlocked. She's scared of nothing. Nothing. And I am scared of nothing. I'll have, and I have every door locked, all the lights on, police department around the house, chairs against the door. But look, and I'm going to get to this in a minute, but my last point. But this matter of when you come back together, and let me get to the next point. Look at chapter 3 and verse 4. We just read chapter 3 and verse 4. It was but a little that I passed from them, but I found him whom my soul loveth. All right, now look at me. He'd been gone. Now he's back. Let's see what happened. I held him and would not let him go. That's the good part. Now the bad part. So I brought him to my mother's house. Now I admit there's some things about the Bible I can't figure out. She hugged him because she gained to her mother-in-law. That's her mother-in-law. But what I'm saying is that a big and loving welcome. Now listen carefully. This is the most important thing I'm going to say tonight. I call it the reentry time. Let me give you an example. Let's take my own case. I leave nearly every Monday morning to go preach somewhere. Now here's what I do. Now follow me carefully. I go down to the Highland, Hammond bus terminal where the tri-state bus takes off. I'll catch that bus down there early Monday morning. I ride that bus, 1 hour's bus ride if it's if traffic is good. I ride that bus over to the airport. Now, I usually leave about the same time, and usually I go to the Red Carpet Club, which is a, you can join that, and it's a little place where frequent flyers can go, and you can you have a private desk if you want to, and you have a private telephone, you have a fax machine, if you want to sit and so forth as you can, I go there and get me to a private desk, and I go to work. Now, wait a minute. I left home. I went down to the tri-state coach. I rode the bus for an hour. Let's suppose I stay 2 hours at the Red Carpet Club, and I always work there. Then I catch a plane. Then I ride that plane to somewhere across America. Now, wait a minute. I've only been gone a few hours now. I met at the air, I would say, anywhere from an hour's flight to 4 hours flight. I get off the airplane, I met there by someone, and they drive me to my room. I have a bite to eat, quickly, and then I met and rushed off to preach that night. Then I come back after, preach that night, and after service, I take about 30 minutes to an hour to sign Bibles. And that's horrible. If I can ever get my hand on a person that thought of this idea of signing Bibles, I'll choke them to death. I'll kill them. And that's getting worse. Now they won't take pictures too. Especially when you get old, you know. He may not be here again. I want to stick both fingers in the eyeballs. Son, you say, brother, I'm him. The day's going to come soon when you'll say, I got to hear him. Won't have him long. Oh, shut up. Wait a minute now. I have driven to the bus station. I've ridden the bus. I've been a couple hours at the Red Carpet Club. I've been a couple hours on the airplane. I've been 30 to 45 minutes going to my room. I've checked in a motel room. I've unpacked. I've gotten a bite to eat. I've gone to church. I've preached. I've signed Bibles. I've posed for pictures, sometimes with my shirt on, sometimes with it off. It all depends. I pose for pictures. I go back to my room and I go to bed and sleep. Wake up the next morning, get a bite of breakfast, and then they take me to church. I preach again. I'm like a vending machine. Put a quarter in me and I just start preaching. That's all. But I preach again. Every Tuesday morning, almost every Tuesday morning after I preach, there's a luncheon for preachers and full-time Christian workers. I sit at the head table. Always, and then after the luncheon, there's a question-answer time. They ask me questions, and the reason is because I know all the answers. Yes, no one may be, but they ask questions. Now, look at all I've done. Hey, I haven't been gone much over a day. Look at all I've done. Ride to the bus station, but hours ride to the airport, 2 hours in Red Carpet Club, 2 hour airplane flight, eat a meal at the hotel. And usually a sandwich or something is brought to my room, and then go preach, and then sign Bibles, then take pictures, and then come back, and then sleep, and then wake up, and then have breakfast, and then go to church, and then preach, and then have a Tuesday luncheon, and then a question and answer time. Then I usually have appointments. People need to see me. Preachers need to see me. I'm like a dead animal on a highway. The vultures are coming to get me, and here I'm coming to town. They fly around. Houses coming here. They think I can solve all their problems, and so I have counseling sessions. And then get back to my room, maybe 3:30. I call and the office here and take care of the work there. And I'm telling you all I do. And then I eat a bite. Then I go to church. Then I preach again. Listen to me. I haven't been home yet. My wife's been home. I haven't been home yet. Been gone all this time. Then I preach again. And then, of course, sign Bibles and so forth and come back. And then I go to sleep. Get up on Wednesday morning, early, usually about 3:30 to 4 o'clock. Go to the airport. Fly to the airplane. Go to the Red Carpet Club and stay till my bus to come. Catch the bus, go back to Highland. My car is always there waiting for me. Then I go out to college and preach on chapel. After chapel, I have a meeting with the faculty and staff. Then I go, and then I have an appointment or two maybe. And then I come back home at 4:30 to have a bite to eat in his house. Now, I haven't seen her since Monday morning. You know what I expect? It seems like I've been gone forever. I feel like a serviceman's been home fighting, comes home after a war. Just been 2 days and a few hours. But it seems like forever. You preachers have to that time. You understand it? I don't understand why there's not a band out in the front yard. Or there's somebody on a trapeze out there. A juggler. Now, wait a minute. I'm not complaining at all because Ms. Hiles gives me the kind of greeting I want. But wait a minute. You ladies, your husband, every day, to him, it seems like he's been gone for days when he comes back in after work at night. That re-entry is the most important, listen to me carefully, for 3 minutes I won't talk about it. That re-entry is the most important part of a marriage. When you get back together, you ought to make her feel when she's been away or you've been away, that this is the biggest thing in the world, and you ought to make him feel the same way. Boy, this gal, when he got back home, she hugged him and said, you're not leaving me, but I can take you to my mother-in-law. Now, why she did that, I've got the foggiest idea. And I'm not suggesting, well, my mother-in-law's in heaven now. I'm not suggesting that you ladies do that. There are better things that your husband would like to do when he comes home than go see his mother-in-law. I can't think of any worse thing. But this re-entry time is vital. It is vital. I'm talking about if you're gone for 10 hours, hour to work, 8 hours work, hour coming home, it seems like forever. And the one that's gone feels like a stranger at home. I walk in this teacher's meeting every Wednesday night. It's one of the hardest things I do. I'm re-entering my church. I've not seen you since Sunday night. To you, it doesn't seem like a long time. To me, it seems like I haven't been here for months. I've got to get readjusted. I'm glad I do that because I can get feeling home over there before getting here. But in a marriage, it is vital. Now listen to me. You shore up what you do while you are apart. Now folks, look at me and now I got 1 minute. Look at me now. Take seriously what I'm teaching on Wednesday night. Don't just sit out there and say, yeah, big deal. No, don't do that. Take seriously what I'm teaching on Wednesday night. I promise you, if you'll do what's been taught tonight, from this book tonight, about the 6 things this couple did while they were apart, I promise you, it'll transform your marriage. It will. So I just repeat them and we'll close. Number one, think affectionately about each other in your part. Meditate on being together and hugging and kissing. Number two, miss each other. Number three, tell others while you're apart that you love each other. Number four, brag on each other to others while you're apart. Number five, be excited when he or she returns after being apart. Number six, give a big and loving welcome. And I'll promise you that these moments while you're apart can prepare you to get back together. Now, you got to do it on purpose, because while you're apart, everything under the sun is going to happen. You're going to have a kid's got the measles, going to get nail in his foot. Another kid's got to go have a play at the grade school, and then there's a rat loose in the bedroom, and then all the things under the sun. But you force yourself to think about each other, and you shore up your marriage while you're apart. It'll transform your marriage while you're together. Shall we stand? It's 8:15.